G'day. Someone said g'day back. I'm Greg. Someone mentioned earlier, swimming with sharks. That used to be my job. I used to be a marine biologist, and I worked at the aquarium at Darling Harbour. My job was to go into the tank and feed the sharks. There's only a certain number of times you can do that before they get curious, which is why I don't do that job anymore. So if you're looking for someone to talk to afterwards, come and feel free to chat with me. Now, some people are they're so outrageous that you cannot help but be intrigued by them. Have you seen this story floating around the internet? Outside England's Bristol Zoo, there's a parking lot for 150 cars and 8 buses. Now, for 25 years, its parking fees were managed by a very pleasant attendant. The fees were £1.40 for cars and £7 for buses. And then one day, after 25 solid years of never missing a day's work, he just didn't show up. So the zoo management called the city council and asked them to send another parking agent. The council did some research and replied that the parking lot was the zoo's own responsibility. The zoo advised the council that the attendant was a city employee. The city council advised the zoo that the attendant had never been on the city payroll. Meanwhile, sitting in his villa, somewhere on the coast of Spain or France or Italy, is a man who apparently had a ticketing machine installed completely on his own and then simply began to show up every day to collect and keep the parking fees, estimated at about £560 a day for 25 years. Assuming 7 days a week, this amounts to just over £7 million and no one even knows his name. Now, look, I think it's too good a story to not be an urban myth, but that's a guy you want to meet, right? That is a guy that you just can't help but be curious about him. Because some people are like that. Just recently, I jumped on Facebook and I said to everyone, who is so outlandish, so outrageous that you would just want to meet them? And it was people like Sacha Baron Cohen. So whether it's Ali G or Borat, I'm sorry for the picture on the left, but I couldn't help it. Any guy who will do that on film forever, he's earned my respect. I'm curious about the guy. Other people said Russell Brand. Even if it's only for his fascination with his own, if he is as interesting as he finds his nipples, I want to meet the guy. One that really got me laughing is heaps of people said Chuck Norris. You know Chuck Norris? He's from my childhood. I grew up in the 80s, and he was this kind of B-grade action movie star in the 80s. And he was never anything, really. He was the guy that you got if Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone said no. But now this whole mythology has grown up around Chuck Norris and how tough he is. And there's all these jokes about just how lethal Chuck Norris is. And most of them are just incredibly stupid and inane. It's things like, curiosity wanted to kill the cat, but Chuck Norris got there first. Chuck Norris doesn't call the wrong number. You answer the wrong phone. Chuck Norris has a grizzly bear carpet in his living room. It's not dead. It's just too scared to move. My favorite, though, is there used to be a street named after Chuck Norris. It's changed because nobody crosses Chuck Norris or lives. I was reading through this list, just killing myself laughing. And it is stupid, but it makes me want to meet the guy to see if he takes it seriously. Because you can imagine, he's kind of in his 60s now. You can imagine him kind of lying in his hospital, saying, I'll kill you. It's that kind of guy. One guy who really tries to be outlandish and interesting and intriguing is Anthony Mundine. You come across Anthony Mundine? He's a boxer, and he tries these outlandish statements, but usually he falls hilariously short. My favourite Anthony Mundine quote of all is, sure, there have been injuries and deaths in boxing, but none of them serious. I've checked, he really didn't say that one. Who would it be for you? Who is so outrageous, so over the top, that you think, I want to meet this guy. I want to meet him. Can I suggest Jesus ought to be at the top of that list? Now look, that might surprise you, because a lot of people kind of figure that Jesus and God and religion, it's kind of irrelevant. I mean, what's Jesus got to do with your life? And I have to admit, I thought that. I haven't always been a Christian. I grew up about as far away from Christianity as it's possible to grow up. My dad was a first grade footballer and a boxer. The only thing we did religiously was go to the beach. And yet I became a Christian in year 12. But up until that point, I really couldn't say how Jesus and God had anything at all to do with me. They, to me, seemed just completely irrelevant. And that might be you. And today, I want to introduce you today to the most outrageous, the most extraordinary man you will ever meet. Jesus makes such incredible claims about himself, and to be honest, such challenging claims about you and I, that I reckon he demands further investigation. If you look on the outline you got when you came in, looks like this. You'll see there's kind of there's the passage that was read for us on one side, and there's just a bit of a run sheet of some of the things that I'm going to say. And you'll see three things that Jesus does that are completely outrageous. And the first one is Jesus makes outrageous claims about himself. So he claims to come from heaven. So if you've got that sheet up, and just have a look at sentence 23 there. But Jesus continued, "You are from below, I'm from above. You are of this world, I'm not of this world." Now Jesus is talking to the kind of religious leaders of his time. These are the important people. And he says, you are all from this world. You're from below. But I've come from heaven. And he says, since I have come from heaven, I speak for God. So have a look in sentence 26. He says, I've got much to say in judgment of you. But he who sent me is reliable. And what I've heard from him, I tell the world. See, Jesus says, I'm not just from heaven. I was sent by God, and I speak for God. In fact, Jesus says he is God. He claims to be God himself. See, there's two weird things that Jesus says in this passage, in sentences 24 and 28. You can see them up on the screen. Did you notice when it was read for us, they're a little bit strange? Jesus sort of starts a sentence, but then doesn't finish it. So sentence 24, I told you that you would die in your sins. If you don't believe that I am, you will indeed die in your sins. Now what does that mean? I am what? If you don't believe that I am, it's the same down in sentence 28. Jesus says, when you've lifted up the Son of Man, then you'll know that I am, and that I do nothing on my own. Okay, what does that mean? I am what? The sentences don't make sense. They don't finish until you read the Old Testament. Because see, in the Old Testament, I am was actually God's name. In the Old Testament, God sends a guy named Moses to lead his people Israel. And Moses asks God, he says, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask, well, what's his name? What do I tell them? And God says, I am who I am. That's what you're to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. See, God calls himself I am, because God just is. God didn't become. He always was. He just is. He's the I am. And then Jesus comes and he says, well, that's me. I am. I've come from heaven. I speak for God. I am God. Now, just stop and think about that for a minute. Because it's a massive, massive claim. It's the sort of thing that gets you medicated nowadays, calling yourself God. In Jesus' day, it was the sort of thing that got you killed. But Jesus says, I come from heaven, I speak for God, and I am God. What if that's true? Just think for a second. What if Jesus really is God? Because if that's the case, what makes him different from anyone else you've ever encountered? What it means is you can't put Jesus into a box with any other person. Look at what Bono said about Jesus in an interview. He said, look, the secular response to the Christ story always goes like this. He was a great prophet. Obviously, a very interesting guy. Had a lot to say along the lines of the other great prophets, Elijah, Muhammad, Buddha, Confucius. But actually, Christ doesn't allow you that. He doesn't let you off that hook. Christ says, no, I'm not saying I'm a teacher. Don't call me teacher. I'm not saying I'm a prophet. I'm saying I'm the Messiah. I'm saying I'm God incarnate. I reckon Bono gets Jesus there. Jesus isn't claiming to be like Muhammad or Buddha, as interesting as those guys are. He's claiming to be God. And if he is, look, that's huge. Because if he really is God, what that means is this guy holds all the secrets to the universe. This guy really does have the answer. Among all the people you'll ever meet in your life, he's the one who actually knows what he's talking about. It means you can trust him. It means you can follow him. So my dad died on Boxing Day in 1999. And we were really close. We were... In the last 14 years or so, I found myself thinking, you know, whenever I face a huge decision, I found myself thinking, I just wish Dad was here. Because I really want to get his advice. You know, when we started having kids, we bought a house. Because that's the thing, right? We spend so much of our lives trying to figure out the right thing to do. Because most of life's just guesswork. Most of life is just trying to figure out, is this the right course for me to do? That's my whole life here. I'm just guessing. Is this the right person for me to be going out with? But if Jesus really is God, if he has come down from heaven and he speaks for God, well, that means he's got the answers. And that means we can trust him to tell the truth to us. More than that, if Jesus really is God, that means your life has meaning. See, so many people that we talk to, they really want to know, what is life all about? What's the point of it? Because most of life actually seems pretty pointless, doesn't it? But if Jesus is God, well, that means that he created you for a purpose. And he can tell you what that purpose is. So if you're not a Christian yet, can I say to you, this guy's got to be worth checking out, doesn't he? Even if there's the smallest chance that what he's saying is true, this is a guy you've got to check out. And look, if you're a Christian, if you already know Jesus is God, you already believe this stuff, can I say to you, I think we need to get a little bit more outrageous in the way we talk about Jesus. See, Christians often get a little bit shy when it comes to talking about Jesus, because we don't want to sound like we've got all the answers, and we don't want to sound like we know the truth. That sounds a little bit arrogant when you kind of talk in those terms. But look, we need to say to our friends, I know this guy who is out of this world, literally. Everything he says is from God. In fact, he is God. And so his least important word is more important than anything any other human being has ever said. It's more important than anything Buddha said. It's more important than anything Muhammad said. It's more important than anything Gandhi said, or any Pope or Mandela or Bono. Anything he says is the most important thing. And I'm blown away by him. No matter how big you sell Jesus to your friends, you can't sell him any bigger than he does. He says he's God. He's outrageous, isn't he? So he makes outrageous claims about himself. And the second thing is, if you look on your outline, Jesus says some pretty outrageous things about us. He says that you are a slave. Me too. Have a look in sentence 31. To the Jews who'd believed him, Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you're really my disciples. Then you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And they answered him, well, we're Abraham's descendants. We've never been slaves of anyone. How can you say we'll be set free? Jesus replied, I tell you the truth. Everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now, we've got to get what Jesus is saying here, because it is pretty full on. See, there are two ideas in our culture that are huge. We really love them. The first idea is something called autonomy. It's the idea that, look, it's my life. I get to make the decisions. I get to set the rules. I get the final say. Autonomy. And the second is that I'm a good person. Oh, sure, I may not be perfect. Who is? But I'm a good person. I'm a nice person. I'm not a bad person. And here, Jesus says both those ideas are wrong. He says we're not good people. He calls us sinners. Now, sin's one of those really tricky words for us, because straight away, as soon as we hear a word like sin, we immediately start thinking of lists. Lists of things we're not allowed to do. Stuff like lying and swearing. And look, those things are sins. But the heart of sin is actually something different. The heart of sin is autonomy. from God. That God isn't going to be the God of my life. I am. God's not going to make the calls. God's not going to set the rules. God's not going to set the direction. I am. Basically, the whole idea of sin is it just puts me in charge. And Jesus says, we've all done that. Doesn't matter who you are, we've all done it. We've all said, I want to be free from God. And the thing is, when we thought we were getting free from God, Jesus says, actually, we're becoming slaves. We thought we were going, yep, God's not in charge anymore. I am. That's freedom. But Jesus says, actually, when you do that, you become a slave. For one, we become slaves to that autonomy itself. That is, autonomy is addictive. Once you start making all of the decisions for yourself, once you start putting yourself in the center, Jesus says, you can't stop. We're addicted to this rebelling against God. But he says, we're not just addicted to this rebelling against God thing. He actually says something really offensive in sentence 42. Have a look. It's about as offensive as you can get, I think. Jesus said to them, if God were your father, you'd love me. For I come from God. Now I'm here. I haven't come on my own. He sent me. Why is my language not clear to you? Because you're unable to hear what I say. You belong to your father, the devil. And you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there's no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he's a liar and the father of lies, yet because I tell the truth, you don't believe me. Now, how offensive is that? What Jesus says is, you and I also belong to Satan. We're slaves, his slaves too. The way it works is, when we rebelled against God, we actually joined Satan's camp. Because Satan was the first one to rebel against God. He was the first one to make that claim of autonomy, and we just follow him. And so he gains a certain amount of control in our lives. We believe his lies now. And so Jesus says these really hard things to us. He says, we have claimed autonomy from God, and we're slaves to that now. And we followed Satan in doing it, and we're slaves to that now as well, which means we're also slaves to God's punishment. Because in sentence 24, Jesus says, well, one day you'll die in your sins. And look, that is all pretty hard to hear, isn't it? Because that's not how I want to think about myself. I want to think that I'm a good person. Sure, I'm not perfect, but who is? I mean, I tell the odd lie, and I've got a bit of a temper, ask my kids. But there are plenty of worse people walking on the planet than me. Certainly, I don't want to think of myself as belonging to Satan. But that's what Jesus is saying. He says, we've all put God aside and put ourselves in the pole position. And Satan did it first, and we're following him, and it's a form of slavery that we just can't stop. And look, again, as hard as it is to entertain that idea, what if Jesus is right? Like, because I mean, I have to admit, when I first heard of this, all this stuff, I kind of thought, man, I don't want to think that. But what if he's right? Because at one level, it explains a lot about the world as I see it. It explains why people can be so good, because God made us. It also explains why people can just be so bloody selfish, because we put ourselves in pole position. And it explains why it's so hard to change, why we can't get people to obey laws, why we can't get people to do the right thing, because... well, we're slaves. If Jesus is right, it actually has a lot of explanatory power for the world we live in, doesn't it? But, you know, if Jesus is right, it gives us a massive problem. Because it means that God is going to judge us for this rebellion. So look what Jesus says in sentence 24 again. He says, I told you, you would die in your sins. If you don't believe that I am, you'll indeed die in your sins. If Jesus is right, we've got a problem. But here's where Jesus does the most outrageous thing of all. He makes the most massive claim. Because if you look at point 3 in our outline, he makes an incredible offer. Have a look in sentence 31. He says, if you hold to my teaching, you're really my disciples, and then you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. See, we may be slaves, but Jesus makes this outrageous offer of freedom. He says, I've come from God. I speak for God. In fact, I am God. And I can free you from this slavery. That slavery to rebelling against God, that slavery to following Satan, that slavery to God's judgment. I can free you from all of that. If you hold to my teachings, if you believe what I say, I will set you free. Jesus is offering to fix the mess we're in with God. He's offering to change our character. He's offering to change actually our eternal destiny. He's offering forgiveness. And look, at this point, all outrageous people get themselves into trouble. So you can make outrageous claims all you like, but eventually where you get yourself into trouble is delivering. Because eventually you've got to start to back up those outrageous claims you make. So Anthony Mundine, before he fought a guy named Sven Otke once, at the press conference, he said, "Sven Otke punches like a girl." Sven Otke knocked Mundine out. And then he said, when he wakes up, tell him he got knocked out by a girl. See, once you make outrageous claims, eventually you've got to back them up. And Jesus makes these incredibly outrageous claims. "I'm from God. I speak for God. You're in real trouble with God, but I can forgive you. I can save you." How do we know he can back them up? Well, funnily enough, that's actually the answer Jesus gives. I think the most important sentence in this whole thing is in there in sentence 28. Have a look. He says, "When you've lifted up the Son of Man, then you'll know that I am. That I do nothing on my own, but I speak just what the Father's taught me." He says, you want proof? You want to know that I'm telling you the truth? You'll know when you've lifted me up. Now, lifting up is Jesus' way throughout this whole book of talking about his death, because he got lifted up, he got hoisted up on the cross. He says, you want to know that you want proof that I'm God? You want proof that I can save you? When you hoist me up on that cross, then you'll know. See, Jesus' death and his resurrection are actually the proof of everything he says. Because not long after this, Jesus went to Jerusalem and he was killed on the cross. That's just a matter of public record. But it wasn't the end. Because 3 days later, Jesus did something that no human being has ever done. He rose again. He got up off that slab. He took off his grave clothes. And he walked out of that tomb. And he didn't do it quietly. He didn't do it secretly. He didn't do it in some kind of back. Hundreds of people saw him. Hundreds of people saw him walking around. Jesus did die and rise again. And here, before all of that happens, Jesus says, you want proof that I'm God? You want proof that I can save you from this mess we're in with God because we've rebelled against him? Watch this. When I die and when I rise again, you will know. That is, he predicts it all before it happens. And not just here, he does it in loads of places in the New Testament. And when he does it, well, look, that changes things, doesn't it? Because suddenly, Jesus moves from just being a loudmouth like Anthony Mundine to actually being someone that you've got to deal with. In fact, someone that maybe you can trust. He moves from being outrageous to being believable. He says, I am God, and then he proves it by dying and rising again. In fact, Jesus' death wasn't just the proof that he is God and that he could save us. It's actually how he saved us. Because when Jesus died, he died in our place. That's what Jesus' death was. He became a slave to our punishment. So instead of God punishing us for our autonomy and us for our rebellion, God punished Jesus. Jesus took our punishment so that we can go free, and then he rose from the dead. And again, let me ask you, what if all of this is true? I didn't used to believe it, but I do now. What if Jesus really did die and rise again? What if he really does set us free from God's punishment? What if all that's true? Look, I reckon it means checking Jesus out is the single most important thing you could ever do. Finding out if it's true is the most important thing you could ever do. It means that Jesus becomes this incredibly compelling and outrageous guy. That's why people right the way through history keep coming back to this guy and being fascinated by him. Look what some of the greatest people in history have said about Jesus. "As a child, I received instruction in both the Bible and the Talmud. I'm a Jew, but I am enthralled by the luminous figure of the Nazarene. No one can read the Gospels without feeling the actual presence of Jesus. His personality pulsates in every word. No myth is filled with such life. Albert Einstein said that. A man who was completely innocent offered himself as a sacrifice for the good of others, including his enemies, and became the ransom of the world. It was a perfect act. Mahatma Gandhi said that. Alexander, Caesar, Charlemagne, and myself founded empires. But on what foundation did we rest the creations of our genius? Force. Jesus Christ founded an empire upon love, and at this hour, millions of men would die for him. My personal favorite? Real men do live for Christ. It's important to make your peace with Christ while the opportunity exists. Life is so fragile that you'll never know when it's going to be over. It could be over in the blink of an eye, and then it's too late to accept God's gift of salvation. I'll obey Chuck Norris. See, if you're not a Christian yet, can I say, you don't need to become a Christian today. It took me months of exploring it. It took me months of getting ideas straight in my head. Why don't you just commit to investigating? That's what the next 3 weeks is. It's a conversation between Credo and the university, between Jesus and the university. Can I give you two ways? The first way is this. If you all grab it, you'll see in the back there's a stack of opportunities. There's a whole bunch of different talks that people are doing. There's things like your God doesn't exist and your God is dead. The one on the top left, I've been told there's a free dinner. I reckon that's the one I'd go to. On Thursday night, we're going to be looking at your God makes you homophobic. So we're going to be wrestling with a whole bunch. Why not commit to coming along to three events and just checking it out? Or if you've actually got questions, if you want more of a kind of a dialogue back and forth, if you really want to wrestle with things, why not come along to the Jesus course? This is starting afterwards. And you can see, Nick's going to tell us a bit more about it. You can see it on the back of here. It's 5 weeks. That's 5 weeks of throwing around ideas. It's designed to be a really open, easy place to throw around questions. Why not come along? Why not commit to one of those two things? I didn't have many questions about Jesus when I was growing up. You know, what I've discovered is Jesus has answers to questions that I didn't even know existed. And Jesus pushed me in ways I didn't even know I could have been pushed. He is God, and he is the best thing that has ever happened in my life. Why not come and check him out? I'm going to talk to God just for a second. God, we praise you that you sent Jesus. We praise you that he speaks for you. We praise you that you and he together are God. We praise you that Jesus rescues us from the mess that we've made. In wanting to be free from you, we've made ourselves slaves. We thank you that Jesus took the punishment for that. And Jesus is outrageous. Please give us a curiosity about this guy, to get to the bottom of him, to find out about him, to see if it really is actually true.